Hello and welcome to another episode of My Opinion Means Nothing. This week on the show, I am joined by the guy with the purple tie.
Yeah, yeah, yay!
How you doing, man?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. This is a really dope concept, and I'm gonna say it here and now, it's my very first podcast, and
welcome.
I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
Welcome to the game.
But yeah, thank you for having me on. My opinion matters.
My opinion means nothing.
Hey, listen.
Your opinion don't matter.
My opinion doesn't matter here. What am I talking about? Yeah. But no, I really look forward to, you know, what we discuss and what we talk about.
So what I usually do is on the show is I kind of find some sort of like news articles to find out what's happening in the world. There has been a lot of things happening. It's a bit noisy here.
It's very easy to find something that's happening because it's always something happening in the world.
Yes.
And it's a mad world, but we have to work our way around it.
Yeah, like, for example, I want to start with tech news.
Because
I found it the most interesting for this, like, kind of, on this plane for where we are now, kind of. So basically, the title reads, Twitter will be labeling deep fakers and other manipulated media as a new rule change on their platform.
Mm.
So what that means is basically, if something, for example, is deemed as manipulating media, they will label it as manipulating media, and kind of, so you know that this is what you're gonna watch is manipulating media, and if it's kind of too fabricated or fake, or like too fabricated or not real, they'll just remove it altogether. So they're making kind of, so there's kind of like this no fake news kind of business. Like you,
yeah, that is a very big thing. I remember, I think it was a while back. Like I never used to know nothing about fake news, and there was a big surge a couple of years back of, you know, different what they posed as factual news articles, and
yeah,
they look pristine, amazing,
yeah.
And then there was a whole thing of like, oh, it's a hoax, oh, it's a fake news, oh, it's this, and I feel like nowadays, you know, there's a whole influx of them, and it's very hard to like sift through what's fake, what's real, what should I look on, what should I not. And I understand what Twitter are trying to do, and I understand like they're trying to protect and make it better for people, and make sure that people are getting the right information and are not misled. But I mean, it's a double-edged sword.
It's kind of hard to stop.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a very double-edged sword, because you have to remember that, one, by clamping down on it, which I'm not saying that they shouldn't, but by clamping down on it, you're kind of like reducing people's self-expression.
I see
in
what
a sense.
You mean, yeah.
But I also understand that you don't want people to, you know, take something for fact, and then it could lead grievous, you know, grievously,
yeah, of course,
which
yeah.
is, you should definitely, most definitely protect on that. But I feel like there should be ways to, like, I don't know, it's a very tricky one. Yeah.
So basically, they made this policy based on kind of, they done kind of, it was kind of like a feedback form kind of thing with the people that use the platform. Everyone that uses Twitter, they asked them the question, how do you think that we should kind of combat this? And this is kind of a community-based way of how they're kind of going to battle it. So in a sense, they're kind of taking on board what the users want and how they feel that they could be, I guess, protected from this. But like you said, it's taken away, in a sense, from freedom of speech, and that's kind of the reason why we use Twitter, people use Twitter, because of that freedom to say whatever you want, no matter whether it's kind of good or bad. But
yeah, I feel like, I think it's a good thing that they're actually using, you know, information and things that they get from what people think.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely a very good thing that they're trying to do. But I also feel like, you know, a lot of people from hearing about, oh, there's fake news online, be careful what news you believe is fact and whatever. I think it's made us as human beings, we can be very indecisive.
Yeah.
And the moment we hear something is fake news or there is such thing as fake news, we're then very, what's the word I'm looking for? We're very...
kind of mistrusting of it?
Yeah, we're very mistrusting, but then we're also very naive in the sense of like, we then think, okay, everything on social media is now not to be taken for fact. Everything is a joke.
And it's kind of hard in the world where we live in now where you can't kind of just believe or read just one.
No, you have to read 100.
Exactly.
And it's like, why am I going to read 100 if I can get my source from one place?
Yeah.
But then, oh, you're saying that one source that I'm taking is not, you know, 100%. So how do I know all of the 99 are going to be not the same, you know?
It's kind of like you said, it's a double-edged sword and you kind of have to... use your own judgment, I guess, in a sense.
You have to. And I feel like it's come to the point where we're just, you know, so it's either two ways. It's either polar opposites of, you know, one side you're either doing, you're that one person who's the reading 100 pages and 100 different sources to get, you know, the right information.
Yeah.
Or you just don't do it at all. And you really are switched off from all world news and world facts.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Well, I know people that only get their news from Twitter.
Yeah, there are people that only get their news from Twitter. One, I think the first place I saw fake news as a problem was Facebook. Facebook was deemed as fake news platform.
And then I jumped off Facebook.
Yeah, and that's what happens.
Tell the truth, the real reason I jumped off Facebook, was because my parents jumped on Facebook. And like my parents, like my mom was on Facebook before she was on Facebook because them ones where I posted a status or something and then two twos by the time I got home, like I did it
like, well, like, what this?
So by the way, so and so said, I was like, but how did you, you're not even
what,
on
when,
Facebook.
Where? Who told you? It's then, fake news, leave it alone.
You know?
But no, my parents are not tech savvy.
Yeah.
Let me shorten that word because it's gonna be a madness. Yeah, they're not tech savvy.
Oh, you're lucky.
And like, I mean, to be honest, I did mention it to them to say, I said to my mom, I said, oh, you should get Facebook because, you know, so and so auntie has got this and that and you could connect because she's all the way in Ethiopia and whatever.
Yeah,
and then they were like, nah, I don't want it. And they're like, because their biggest fear with technology and stuff like Facebook and whatever is privacy. Now, in their mind, they think if I am your friend, your friends can see my friends, and my friends can see your friends, and we can see everything that they post.
Pretty much.
But even though, I've explained to her 100 times, there are privacy settings. There are ways you can.
Yeah.
No. But this person said this, so I believe this person. There's a lot of fake news on social media, but then there's a lot of rumors spread by people. So.
Yeah, it's kind of,
it's
I
both
mean,
ways.
Back in the day on Facebook when it first started, when there were no privacy rules.
Oh, that was mad. Them days were, free for all. Like,
when they were still figuring things out.
Them days, like, even your school could see what you're posting and you'd be picked up at school and be like, you posted this. I'm there like, wait, what? How do you know?
It's true.
How do you even know my Instagram and my Facebook? Like, I need to change my name, you know? And that's the other thing, like a lot of people now as well are changing their name and doing all of this madness, like especially if you like work in education, which I do, sad enough. But even like when we are first inducted, the first thing we know about is if you have Facebook, if you have social media, make sure it's not in your name.
What?
Because what happens, the kids will find you.
Yeah, they will find you.
But the other thing I am still strong on, and even in that sense, is you still have privacy settings.
Yes.
So they will see you're on Facebook, but they don't see nothing apart from that.
They can't add me.
They cannot do nothing like that, you know. But it is like, even the what Twitter are doing, it is, I guess, a lot on safeguarding.
Yes.
And safeguarding us as people, you know. And some people will hear the word safeguarding and think, oh, it's only vulnerable people. But no, you have to be safeguarded as well.
Everyone,
you know, because you cannot then go and take something that you thought was fact. And then, you know, our hearts break heavily.
Yeah,
so if you take something as fact and then it's not fact, you're then like, huh, so what is and what isn't?
It's true. So the second thing on the tech news will have to be about Android. It's only, I only think this is cool. I don't know, do you have an Android?
I am. I'm an Android user. Then I used to be an Apple user.
Oh, okay, cool.
But I defected.
What made you defect before we continue this argument? Put this article
up. How can I sum this up? You know what it is? Like, I was very, like, an iPhone person.
Yeah.
And I had the, all of, like, the 6, the 4, the, all of this, whatever, whatever. And I guess one reason I only used it or had it was for the FaceTime feature, because other people had FaceTime and all of this. Which now with Skype, you don't need that. So it's like, you know, get Skype. So then we can. But I feel like the reason why I did defect to Android is because I dropped both of my phones after their warranty and their insurance had expired, and they both broke massively. And then I was like, you know what, let me try and go fix it in the Apple store. And they said to me, oh, do you have your insurance? I said no. And they said, okay, cool, it's going to be 79. I said nope, thank you, bye. Okay, and Android, it's cheaper to buy as well,
I guess,
you know. And the thing for me is, like, if this Android phone, if, like, whatever it is, broke or dropped or got in water, whatever it is, quick rice bath and it's done. But I tried that with the Apple and it worked for a little bit. To be fair to them, it worked for a little bit, but it didn't last. So
I mean, my iPhone is, like, splash-proof at the moment.
I mean, splash-proof, but not waterproof.
Not
you
yet.
Know, you could get a little water on it, it'll be fine, but
yeah.
Dunk it in water, it's gone. You know, but I mean, don't get me wrong, they all have good features.
Yeah, of course.
And it's very difficult nowadays to, like, differentiate between what's better, because they're all competing against each other. Like, the latest iPhone and the latest Samsung have similarities.
Well, I mean, Samsung do make the chips inside iPhones.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you could then call it an Android, but, you know, that's up for debate.
You know,
that's up for your opinion,
that's
100%
you know? That. So what I was going to say is Android users can now enjoy all the great features that iPhone users have been enjoying for years. And what I mean by that is now with, I think there was this new update what's it called? Windows 10?
Yeah.
So you can now, when you're, do you know on iPhone, when your phone rings close to your computer starts ringing?
Interesting.
Or if your phone was, say, downstairs and you were on your computer upstairs, and your phone started ringing, your laptop will start ringing as well because they're in the same vicinity. So uh-huh. you could answer your call on your laptop and if your phone wasn't with you, in a sense. So you can now do that on PC.
Okay.
With Android phones.
With Android phones?
With Android phones, yeah.
Okay.
Apparently there's a new update with Windows 10 where you can do that. It now syncs phone calls. And also there's now a new, like on iPhones they have AirDrop, which is basically essentially Bluetooth.
And there is something similar to Androids now as well.
It's now come on, it's called, what's it saying? It's called
Smart Share, I think it is. Something like that.
For instance, what did you call it? Where is this name? Probably Smart Share.
But it's basically Samsung AirDrop.
AirDrop, yeah. And AirDrop is basically Bluetooth. Do you remember back in the day?
Yes. When you had that one tune and I want it. Yeah, Bluetooth it to me.
Yeah. That's all AirDrop.
But the one
is.
Thing I realized with AirDrop.
Yeah.
You cannot AirDrop from iPhone to Samsung.
You can't
do that. So it still has its
of course, but
growth
then
room, but I see what they're doing as well now as well.
I mean, but those are the two upgrades. So I mean, get excited if you're on PC and Mac.
Hey, if you're a PC and Android user, the year is for you right now. This is the new dawn of the new age,
you know?
2020 vibes.
You know. Right. So next article, another techie-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found it really entertaining.
Tinder. I wrote a, this is not off topic, but it's still on topic. I wrote a very comical poem piece on Tinder called Timber. And just even by that name change, you can tell I'm not a Tinder user and I don't like it. But interesting. Let's see what they're saying.
I wrote one based off my experience on Tinder and dating apps, and I called it Richard.
Okay.
It's very comical.
Similar vibes.
Well. Yeah. So basically the title says, Tinder made $1.2 billion last year.
Come again, 1.2 billion.
Billion.
Damn.
$1 billion last year.
What?
That's what, when I read the title, I was like, what do you mean 1.2 billion? That's a lot of money, you know? Like, just
for a dating app.
Yeah, for a dating app.
Hey, you better take me on a 1.2 billion date if I'm putting that much money into you.
So, basically, because Tinder have in-app purchases,
yeah.
Yep. You have Tinder Plus, Tinder Gold.
Yeah.
And if you can't, because on the normal one, I know you can't swipe unlimited, so you can pay extra so you can swipe unlimited.
And the one thing, you know what? I did research before I did my poem. Actually, yeah, don't judge me. I downloaded Tinder just to see. And like, I was just seeing how the features work. And the one thing I realized is, I feel like they send a message from someone, or someone sends a message, but you cannot see that message until you've paid. And then I was there like, okay, you're gonna delete, done. I'm done with my research.
Oh no, Tinder isn't like that. You can use it for free. You can use it without paying.
Interesting. I have not seen how to do that then.
Oh yeah, you have to connect with Facebook. You can use it for free.
Okay.
But
yeah, 1.2 billion, wow.
So I found it interesting to know, or interesting to find out from reading the article, that basically Tinder is also is owned by Match, which is
also
the owners of Hinge, OkCupid, and Match.com.
Yeah.
So Tinder brought in 1.2 billion in revenue last year, but Match as a whole last year made 2.1 billion.
Yeesh.
So Tinder was made half of that,
yeah.
You know, and then Hinge, OkCupid, and Match.com came up with the rest.
Yeah.
Like, but so it says that Tinder also still averages 5.9 million subscribers in the fourth quarter of 2019. In the last quarter of last year,
yeah,
they were averaging almost 6 million users.
Wow.
And basically what I found was most crazy is that this representation is an increase of 36% from last year.
Yeah.
So they've got more users.
So they've basically, they've upped their game somehow, and there's more people just
more people
filling into that app.
And this only thing that kind of, for me, it breeds the question, is like, we have kind of these dating apps that are kind of meant to make life easier for us so that we don't have to go to a bar and, oh my gosh, talk to a lady,
yeah,
or oh my gosh, talk to a guy, because you know.
But I feel, you know what it is though, and I mean don't get me wrong, I understand why there's a lot of dating apps, and I don't judge nobody who uses them.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
I use
find your person any means how. But on the flip side, I feel like having a lot of these dating apps and having that convenience of, I'm in my home, I'm gonna flick,
yeah,
I'm gonna, you know, mindlessly swipe right, swipe left. But I feel like it takes out that there's a skill which nowadays I don't think, like, chat app lines are no more used. Well, they are, but they don't get the same effect.
Yeah.
And there's no, you know, face-to-face interaction as much.
Yeah.
You know, you can get to know somebody as much as you want through a dating app, but the minute you see them in real life, that's why people are getting catfished out here.
The
minute you see them in real life, they may not meet up to your expectations, they may have certain personality traits that are not great, or God forbid, they're a psycho. You know, it happens, but I feel like I see why they are out there.
No, of course I see.
And I see why a lot of people like to use them.
Yeah.
But I also feel like, don't just rely on it.
Yeah, 100%.
Use the dating apps, find that person, converse with them, then have a phone call conversation, or have a Skype conversation, or have, you know, something face to face. Because that's probably the only way you can eliminate these scary scenarios, you know.
Because it kind of brings you back to, for example, I'm gonna have to find a drink because I can't talk right now.
Hey, Dries.
So it kind of brings me back to, like, when I was in secondary school, and like you, like there's, you get that girl's number that you like, and you dial it, and you're there like, oh, please don't pick up, please don't pick up, please, and she says, hello, hello.
Yeah. Or it's like in the movies, she says hello, you quickly hang up, nothing happens.
You know the ones there, like. That's what, like, this generation now, like, no one calls anyone. And if you call someone,
text me. Like, you better have an emergency.
Yeah, exactly.
You better be half dying or else, you know.
Like, if you're calling someone, it's just like, why are you calling?
Why are you calling me? Like what?
You couldn't text?
You couldn't text? You know? You don't have funds? Like,
it's like, everything is so much an extra effort, but it shouldn't be. It's like, I said it in a poem, I think, that I performed on Monday. We're somehow, like, we've become more social, but we're kind of more further apart at the same time.
Yeah. We're socially antisocial.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happened.
It's like an oxymoron.
It is. And I feel like, as much as we're trying to go forwards, we're going backwards. Like, there's a lot of things that are trying to make it more digitalized, make it more convenient, but then it kind of defeats the purpose of face-to-face interactions. It defeats the purpose of, you know, getting to know somebody properly.
But then it's even like, if you think about it on a bigger scale, it's kind of like things like, we know more about space than we do like the deepest oceans of our own earth. Like, we're trying to explore space and find out what else is out there, if there's other species, but we're not together as a people ourselves. Yeah. Like, how can we go over and find like another civilization and be like, yeah, come to earth, and they come here and they're all together and they come and look at us and they're like
what the heck are these people doing? These are what you call human beings?
They go to museums and like, you man have been here for how long?
How long?
And you're still not?
And you're still at this point?
Do you know what I mean? And it's just...
What?
And it's even like things like, it made me think back. We're in now the year 2020.
Yeah.
100 years ago was 1920. Basically when the start of the suffragette movement was.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, only 100 years ago did women actually start getting independence. That's crazy.
Indeed.
That's like, I'm what, 28, so that's kind of a quarter of my life, like the four quarters of my life.
Mm.
And 25 years went kind of quickly, so to think like, it's kind of within kind of not even my lifetime, kind of my grandparents' lifetime.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know, these
it's
things.
It's nuts, but the funny thing is, like, I mean, big up to all the women with independence, but it's also the one thing that I've seen. Even though there was such big movements like that, there's still inequality.
No, exactly.
There's still all the nonsense that's happening within the workplace, behind closed doors. And I feel like more people should have what you just did, where you just think, okay, wait, it was only 100 years ago. What have we done to move forward? You know, do we need another... We shouldn't need another suffragette movement.
That's
we shouldn't
what I mean.
Need another... atrocity like those things that were happening.
That's what I mean.
You know, we should be more civilized and think, okay, cool, you know, we're all human, we should be treated equal.
But then it's
period.
it's kind of things like when you think about how in America last year how they took away the abortion and it's kind of like, isn't that kind of like a step backwards?
It's a massive we're doing one step forward, two steps back,
taking away people's liberties. This isn't freedom.
No.
We're kind of trying to go back, and it's even things where, I don't know, like, I've been watching The Crown recently on Netflix.
Okay.
And it's only because I love drama, but only when it's not happening to me.
Everybody loves drama when it's not happening to them.
It's just the best drama because it's like real life drama, historical drama. So I'm just sat there like, oh shit.
Oh, damn.
But one thing it does make me feel is kind of, as much as it makes me kind of feel more, think kind of seeing what the, it's hard to be a monarch.
Yeah.
That it's really hard to not say anything.
Yeah.
And like, thinking about that concept is kind of like, imagine having Twitter, but not being able to ever post anything. Like, you have point, like, you have things you want to say, like, usually, like, you have the freedom to just, I've got to post.
Yeah.
You can never say anything that you ever think.
I mean, look, monarchs have people who tweet for them.
Yeah, of course.
They have vetted tweets.
You know what?
Very
I mean?
Vetted tweets.
But and make sure is they're not offending anyone anything. Or taking any size. You know
they
what
can't,
I mean?
And they can't. And I mean, just speaking about monarchs, look what's happening to Harry and Meghan.
Yeah.
That's one way they've spoken out, and then now they're getting all this backlash. If it was any normal person who said, okay, I don't want to work at this job anymore, I want to be a sole trader, I want to work for myself, nobody would blink an eye. But because they're monarchs, because they're in that frame of light, everybody's looking at, what are they doing? What? You're getting at the monarchy? What? How are you going to sustain yourself? How are you going to be safe? How are you going to do this? It's none of your business. That should be their business to do what they wish, you know? So I feel like, but the other thing is, if you go across the sea, there is certain people, no names shall be mentioned, who just tweet whatever is on their mind, and they're known for it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And because they're known for it, they're like, oh, it's just, you know, what they do. Oh, it's normal behavior.
It, you know?
Yeah, we know how it is. But if we took that behavior and applied it to the monarchs, it would be a madness.
We would kick them out of office straight away.
Yeah, it would be a madness.
If the Queen started telling us what she thought about
No, it would be a madness.
We'd be like, who are you? Like, you ain't got no power. Like, why are you telling us what you think?
I feel like in this day and age, I feel like the Queen should be able to say what and how she feels. Simply because, like, okay, I get she's a monarch, I get she's a political power figure, but she's a human being. She's not a robot. Like, she's gonna have expressions and feelings, and I feel like it's still taken away. Like, I swear everybody's meant to have freedom of speech.
I mean,
you know,
from what I've watched and understand, she is the head of state, but she only has constitutional power, which means any laws that happen in Parliament have to go through the Queen.
Her. Yeah.
But because she has to stay impartial and she can't take sides, because for me, kind of the biggest thing is just like Prime Ministers go to her with stuff that they're going to do, and then she just accepts it. But like, because she can't put her own thought or put her own
opinion
in... That's
why Parliament was shut down.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's why Parliament got shut down for how many ever days. And then it was only through Parliament they... deemed it as, you know, illegal, basically, which it felt illegal when it happened.
When that happened,
I was in my mind. I was like, this really feels wrong. This feels illegal. Like, how the hell is Parliament shut down? Are we not a democratic country? Like, isn't this against our own moral codes? You know. But then when they said, oh, it's illegal, I was in like, yeah, you better. Why did you wait so long? Like, what? But anyway.
Yeah, it's true. But it's just crazy that we're living in an age back to dating, if we go back
quickly. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I was looking at it as well.
Like, it's kind of just, it's crazy that we live in an age where, like, it's kind of, everything's kind of so dismissive.
Yeah.
If you think about it, I've seen this person, I like the look of you, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But now, once I've swiped you left, I don't even remember what you look like.
No.
Because I got Samantha now on my screen.
Yeah.
So, like, it's kind of like, oh.
It's like, what's that Rihanna song? Everything in a box to the left.
Yeah,
that's out, and I hope you don't get demonetized for this. But yeah, it's like, you know, we're just putting everything, like, in categories. We're like just swiping left, swiping right without, you know, two concerns of like, you know, who was that person? Oh, why did I even swipe right? You know, did I just swipe right just because of it? Or was there something in her, but what was in her bio? What did she say she likes? What? Conversation starter? What? You know?
It was just the IG name. That was that was all that she had in her bio.
You know what? The amount of, oh, this is my IG. Message me on IG. I'm not on Tinder no much. Why did you get Tinder then? What?
I was like, why?
Excuse me?
Why have you got a profile? What?
Why did you put all that effort to then just be like, oh, just message me on IG. Oh, if you message me on here, I will not respond. Like,
why are you on
Okay, sure.
Taking up space. Cool. So, like, this match is, like, pointless because we matched, but, like, I could send a message, but you're not going to respond to me. And, like, even if I then follow you on Instagram, send you a message on Instagram, you still might not respond.
Hey.
So, you just got a new follower.
Oh, but you still want a follower on Instagram. That's all it is, clout chasing.
Yeah, because you know her profile's private. So
yeah, yeah.
Just be like, private.
I want to message you though, and I can't message you until, like, I have to wait now for you to accept my, okay.
And you know she's going to just accept.
And she's going to accept, but she's not going to look at it. She's going to do a mass acceptance of everybody just because she wants the followers. And you're like, oh, you clout chaser, okay.
I don't get it personally.
I don't either.
Are you a gamer by any chance?
No. I mean, like, I play with my little brother. Like, I'm not a heavy gamer.
Fair dues.
I'm not. But, I mean, do you have anything on gaming?
I play Fortnite.
Yeah, that's a big one, isn't it? Oh, actually, okay. The only knowledge I know about Fortnite, or the massive knowledge I know about Fortnite, is these Fortnite World Cups.
Yeah,
this randomness of 13-year-olds getting how much money?
Hey man,
Excuse me?
Best thing about Fortnite, right, is, like, let me, like, give you the headlines, like, or, like, the highlights for me personally.
Okay.
Highlight number one for me of Fortnite is still in early release, but the game's been out. Like, people been playing the game for at least 2-3 years now.
Yeah.
Game's still in early release.
Yeah.
Game's been out for... People been playing the Battle Royale for 2-3 years. People been playing the online one-player game for years now. I've got it as well. Like, this game is still in early release. When are they releasing the team? Like you said, they've had Fortnite World...
Wait. It's still on beta version.
The game is still in early release. When you see the game loading, it still says early release in the corner. This is what I'm saying. They've had Fortnite World.
But you know what? You know what? I actually take my hat off to them.
Yeah,
because
genius.
The reason why I do is if you look at a different game like FIFA now, they've had FIFA 8, FIFA 9, FIFA 10, FIFA... And there's not that much difference. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple, two things that they've changed. But early release and you're getting that many people online and connecting, that is genius.
It's because they've kind of... They capitalized on the platforms. Basically, they made a game which is cross-platform.
Yeah.
There's not many games where where I could be on my Xbox
and
play with someone on
computer.
A PlayStation or play with someone on the PC or play with someone on Mac. We all be playing in the same game together. That doesn't happen on games. That's probably what brings together
more. That's one of the reasons.
Because it's a free-to-play game.
Yeah.
You don't need to pay for it.
No.
I mean, anyone can play it. Anyone can get the upgrades. It's all about... Like, it's not, if you get an upgrade or a special skin, it doesn't change your character ability. It's just kind of to make your character look cool
good.
Or have a funny dance or a celebration, you know? So it's all accessory-based, which is...
But they're seeing it as business in the sense of, like, with the... Especially going back to the World Cup, is it called?
Yeah, I think it's...
Going back to the World Cup thing, it's like you've got now 13-year-olds... Because I think that's the age limit, you have to be 13 above.
Yeah.
You've got 13-year-olds treating it like a job. They are putting in the work to then get into these battle royales and these World Cup battles.
Hey man, the thing is, the joke is, back in the day when we were in school, like, people would joke, like, when gaming consoles were first becoming big and that, people were like, oh, I'm going to do this.
I'm going to big one on
people
this,
people would joke at you, be like, oh, yeah, go on, play games for a living. You're going to really make lots of money. These guys are playing games for a living and making bank. There's people like, people who stream in their games. Like, I thought that was a bizarre concept
streamers,
when it first came out. I was like, why would you want to watch someone else play a game that you could just go out and purchase and play the game? But then after a while, I was just like, okay, cool. Now you could see, like, different parts of the level that you didn't see that before, or someone might unlock a level that you couldn't unlock, and now you know how to do it, or you're just, it's just maybe you might not have the game yet, and you're kind of getting a proper tour of the game, whether, do I actually want to get this game?
Yeah.
You know, and...
But you know what? The one thing I do tip my hat off to also the streamers, which, I mean, it's very... draining and tiresome
yeah.
to actually be alone in your room with a camera playing, with your game in game being captured, and you having to make it entertaining enough for people to keep coming back to watch you.
You know.
So the money they earn is justified. It's not unjustified.
No, of course it is.
But a lot of people will think, oh, anyone can do it. All I need to do is just sit in my house and.
Well, yeah, probably.
You know,
share
up. But you need to be good at playing the game. Because nobody wants to see a loser. You know?
You gotta train hard, you gotta put them hours in. Like, what's
like any job.
Yeah, it's like everything. Like any skill or craft that you have, put your 100 hours in and you'll make it happen.
But I'm a believer in, like, you know, if you've got a skill, if you've got a craft that you're really passionate about, and just to just go and do it, go and capitalize on your, you know, skills. Because a lot of people are thinking on how to, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not a bad thing, but a lot of people are thinking on how to, like, you know, get into an industry which is already made, but they're not really thinking about how to make an industry or get in an industry that's not been made, that they can make for themselves and for other people around them which are like-minded.
Yeah, it's true. I will mention it only because I think it's just cool for anyone that plays GTA.
Yes.
So GTA Online right now, I think, let's get the exact dates for anyone that plays this game that's listening. So between when this episode is coming out next week, so you're going to miss the first $1 million, yeah, in game.
$2 million, people. $1 million.
So the article reads that Rockstar Games are currently giving away $2 million in game for GTA Online. So, like, they're giving away between January the 30th and the 5th of February, which is today. They're giving every single GTA Online player $1 million in-game money, and then between February the 6th and February the 13th, they'll be giving out the other million.
Hey people, did you hear that date? February the 6th and February the 13th. Lucky for some, unlucky for others.
Yeah. It's bad, it's mad, it's mad.
That is mad. I might just download GTA for myself just to get $1 million.
You know?
I mean, who wouldn't?
In game
or out of game, it's $1 million.
That's true, it's true. It's
you
true.
Know?
But, I'll deal with that afterwards. I like to go on do random facts. I haven't done it for a while, but I thought I'd bring it back for this year since I've had, like, time to do research and shit like that. So, like, the random fact that I found, which was kind of bizarre, is kind of that Saudi Arabia and basically import camels from Australia.
What? Wait. wait. Pause. From Australia. Down under.
Yeah.
And aren't Saudi Arabia like known for like
They are. What? So basically, here's the history, and that's why I found it so interesting. It was so bizarre and so interesting at the same time. So basically, camels were imported into Australia from British India and Afghanistan during the 19th century. But they were used basically for transportation and construction during like the colonization of Australia. But then when the 20th century came, the kind of camel transport was kind of replaced by kind of motorized transport and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And since camels were no longer needed in for transport and kind of construction anymore in Australia, they just let them
go free.
Let them go free in Australia. Australia's huge, isn't it? They're just like, we don't need you.
They did that with kangaroos.
Just go run free. So then, obviously, now there's this huge herd of camels that run free in Australia. There's kind of, I think, over a million camels or so. Like, and like there was fear from like the whoever kind of regulates all this. There was fear that basically that maybe within the next 8 to 10 years, that number was meant to not double or triple. It was meant to like be crazy numbers. Like,
wow.
Because like apparently camels really thrive in Australia.
Interesting.
So now,
yeah,
across Saudi Arabia, Egypt, like Jordan, Cuba,
Middle East.
Yeah, the Middle East basically. Now they all import camels
from Australia,
or Australia export camels over there.
What?
Because
it makes sense.
But it's, the reason is but because the camels that are used, that they have in the Middle East, they're mainly used for kind of camel racing.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Because they're more domesticated and bred for racing.
For racing, yeah.
They're not really...
They're not for lifting moving.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, it is the way of breeding, and it is the way of like how you raise any animal,
what they
will be able to do and not able to do. So it makes sense that they are actually importing it from Australia to there. But it's just weird. I always thought that Saudi Arabia or even just the Middle East was very well known for camels.
Yeah, but they are. Originally, they were there.
But they're known for camel racing.
Racing, yeah.
Rather than camel industry and other things.
Yeah, and I guess eating camel meat is kind of a delicacy in some places.
It is.
It's crazy to think.
There's a lot of delicacies in the world that I couldn't even wrap my head around, but each to their own.
Yeah, so basically this backwards fact is Saudi Arabia now import camels from Australia, but they were originally exported from Saudi, from the Middle East to Australia.
Pause. So wait. Let me get this right. So you're telling me that originally Australia imported
them
British. From
it's the British when they were colonized.
British Empire.
Yeah.
The British Empire imported them from the Middle East to Australia, and now the Middle East are re-importing the CD drive back into the original PC. Back to what?
Yeah, bro.
Yo, okay, like that feels a little bit like, hey, you snatch it from us, we're gonna snatch it right back from you.
But
like,
it's crazy. But I mean, camels are thriving in Australia, and they're just kind of
needs have to meet demand.
Yeah.
That's the way I see
so,
it.
So any camel, most of the camels that you see in the Middle East are probably being exported from Australia.
Rah. Which were originally
from the Middle East.
The Middle East. So they're just basically going back home.
Yeah, pretty
they're
much.
Being deported back home. Hey, no shame in that.
It's true. What time are we on? Cool. So now I'll give you a little interview.
That time?
Yeah,
okay, right. Sure.
So, I don't know, it's just a little few questions.
Whatever you want, I will answer.
So, I'll start with this. I met you at the poetry event Poetical Words.
Indeed. In Hounslow,
in
Youth
Hounslow,
Centre.
Yeah. When did you first start performing?
That's a very good question, and I want to give your viewers a very accurate answer. So, bear with me. But I will say this much, that I've been, so writing in general, I've been writing for about 9 years.
Okay.
But writing poetry, I think began about a year and a half ago. My very first performance, I remember it very well because I was very, very, very actually nervous. So I no longer do this, but I try to cram a poem into my brain and basically wing it on stage, which it didn't end up badly, but didn't end up as good as I would have wanted.
Yeah.
And the recording for that has been misplaced. It's gone, which I'm actually sad about, because I really record all of my stuff, and not even just to post it, just for me to have, and to, because I'm a believer of recording and learning from your mistakes,
and then
just putting it out there to be like, a lot of people only, like, don't get me wrong, you want to be in the best light, but for me, I want to be in every light and show that, look, I'm a real person, I mess up too, and it's cool. But my very, yeah, that very first performance was the 7th of August, 2019.
So you only started writing poetry a year ago.
Yeah.
So you've been writing for 9 years, you said?
Writing 9 years because I'm working on a novel.
Ah, that's, yeah. That was my next question. You
okay.
answered.
Yeah.
Okay, so cool. What's your novel about?
So I started it when I was 12. Okay. And to be really honest with this podcast, I was bored. And I just opened a piece of paper in a line book and yeah. I just started writing. And I guess I had seen a lot of, and it links back to the political themes. I'd seen a lot of cases on the news like Baby P, Victoria Kimball, yeah. and all of these other things. And the one thing that really struck in my mind was we only hear about them when it's too late. You know, we're never going to see what happens beforehand because it's behind closed doors.
Yes.
And I feel like as a society in the Western world, it's been the case of like, it only happens in, you know, third world countries. It only happens in XYZ countries. Yeah. And we never will know it happening because it could happen right next door to you and you'll never know because you're not in that home.
We turn a blind eye to kind of things that we feel like kind of beneath us.
Yeah,
because
we do.
Like, why would it happen to us?
Yeah,
because yeah. we're kind of above it. Not that we're above it, but like kind of, I don't know, we're first world.
We're kind of.
Oh yeah, of course, take the chance.
We're kind of desensitized to it because we don't see it so much happening, but we only see a fraction of what happens in the news.
Yeah,
we only
see
the really, really worst cases.
Yeah.
But we don't think about it in the sense of, you know, it doesn't have to be really, really worst cases for it to be really, really bad.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just basically, yeah, it's not lighthearted. It is very gritty. It is very, you know, it pulls at the emotions. And it's basically, I've written it in a way where anybody in the world can pick it up and imagine it happening right next door to them.
Okay.
And the idea of it is to be a stepping stone in such a massive pond. Of, you know, basically blind eye and, you know, turning the...
So would I read it in, as in, like, I'm reading I as in the first person, or is it...
So it's following the journey of a fictional character,
okay.
which has... and I've taken and basically I've anonymized the things, but I've taken some things from what I've seen and the atrocities I've seen. And it's not as extreme, but it just basically... speaks on topics of race, of racism, of child cruelty, child slavery, and how this fictional character basically finds himself, who he really is. It's got topics of foster care system, it's got, you know, and it's all just to basically shine a light onto people who may not have a voice.
Yeah.
You know, even a lot of my poetry, even though it's a lot, you know, personal, a lot of it can be relatable because,
yeah.
and it may be topics where people haven't spoke out on. Like, one of the ones for me, which I recently spoke out on, was my letter to my dad, which is titled A Home Far Away From Home.
Mm.
And I was writing it, and I was like, I'm not gonna cry. But the minute I finished, I bawled in my eyes. But every time I perform that piece, a lot of people really find it, you know, relatable. And that's how I like to write, I guess.
Yeah.
And how it's how I've been writing since novel to poetry.
I think, I don't know, I find there has to be some sort of truth to what you're writing about. You can write something from an abstract.
Yeah.
But it kind of... If I want to relate with what I'm writing or connect with what I'm writing, I need to find some sort of way it's kind of connecting with me or...
Yeah, I mean, as humans, when we, let alone writing, when we read anything, we're always looking for that relatable meaning.
Exactly.
We're looking, even, you know, going back to Tinder, even when we swipe right, there's still a point of reason and a point of, like... You know, oh, okay, cool, that person likes this.
Yeah, yeah,
oh, I like that one thing, we can relate on that.
Yeah, we'll
Let
swipe.
Me swipe right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's we want to be connected to what's around us,
yeah.
you know, and it's natural as human beings to want to stay connected.
Yeah.
I guess that's why we've got all of this, you know, dating app this and that and that, which is all good.
We've got apps for everything.
It's all good.
Just to make our life easier.
Indeed.
So what made you start writing poetry from the what was like, I don't know, it's kind of a jump from writing a novel to writing poetry, and then also from writing it to thinking, right, yeah, I'm going to perform this shit to other people. It's, these are like big steps, but like kind of really interesting at the same time.
Okay, so to answer your first question, So my book is still only halfway, it's unpublished.
Yeah.
And I started it when I was 12. And so think about the timeline.
Yeah.
GCSEs hit, I had to push it back. A-levels and college hit, I had to push it back. Yeah. And doing all of that pushing back, when I think I was about 18 or 19, or 20, around that time, 19 to 20, I hit massive writer's block. Couldn't write nothing on the book. And the way I write with the book, everything is off the top of my head, more or less. And I just found it really hard, and I was really, really struggling. And I read something that said, so they call it the inner policeman, okay, when you get writer's block. And to silence your inner policeman, one of the things they suggested was to write anything, even if it's waffle, even if it's the most garbage piece of writing that you're ever going to write, just write it.
Yeah.
Because what you find is that you will spark something, whether it be in the first project, whether it be in a new project, you just have to keep moving that way.
Okay.
And it is very therapeutic to do it. So I first started by writing a daily diary, which became a daily rant because I didn't like the workplace I was in. And I found, yeah, it was very interesting. I still have it. And I was looking back on it and like, it just happened that I had this word in my head, which was eyes. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then I just started writing on the topic of eyes. And then on the topic of this word. And then on the topic of this phrase. Or on like, that's very much how I write nowadays. Like, I could write laptop, let's go with it. Or my opinion matters, and let's go with it. And I feel like I've said the whole name of this podcast very wrong. If I have, forgive me.
Man.
Forgive me, listeners. Forgive me.
That's okay.
But yeah, and then I just like, and then it became poetry.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, right, okay, so this is where we're going to go. So let's roll with it. And I just wrote a bunch of, you know, short. It was a lot of short when I started. A lot of short pieces, a couple of long ones. And I was like, this is lovely and it's great, but it's great when it's read, but one thing I've realized, you know, from performing, however long I've been performing, is that when it's read and when it's performed, it gets two different meanings.
Yeah.
You could read it in your head and have your monologue and the way you read in your head, and then when I perform it, it could come out as a whole completely different meaning, which is the beauty of poetry and the beauty of performing. So I was like, okay, cool. Open Mic London, Facebook, Open Mic London, and a whole list of them came up, but this is the one thing. When I did see all of these open mic nights, I could have very well, in that very moment, been like, let me wait a year, let me wait a month, let me wait at this. And I'm someone who's a heavy procrastinator, you know, and I try not to be, but I'm a very heavy procrastinator. So from the very first event, I made it a habit. If I put it in my calendar, I am coming down. Like even for this podcast, up until today, I said to you, Mr. Corey, that if you know, I said to you, you asked me, oh, when are you free? I was like, you know what, let me check, let me make sure that I have a date available, because I'm not going to tell you a date that I'm not going to be at. So that's the only reason why now I'm flooded with events, and I'm flooded with, you know, a lot of people see me everywhere, and if I'm not one place, I'm in another place. But I guess you have to find a balance as well. But yeah, that's the reason why
that's cool.
The reason why the leaps happened.
See, you literally needed a way to kind of diversitize your energy so that you could back to your original project.
You have to.
That's pretty cool.
You have to.
I like what did you call it? Something police?
The inner policeman.
The inner policeman. Oh, that's a dope phrase.
I actually learned that phrase from a workshop that I did in this very space at South Bank Center. And there's a lot of really great workshops out there, you know, there's others out there, I'm not gonna mention them, you can find them. But yeah, it's even workshops as well. it's a beautiful place to just write.
Yeah,
they'll true. Give you a topic, or even you've got prompts, which I wrote on as well. You can find them everywhere, online, social medias. You can see a lot of different prompts from other people. So there's a way to just, but all it is, and I highly recommend it because it works for me and a lot of other people, but you also have to find your own one that works for you. But just write, whatever it is, just write. No one has to read it. No one has to perform it. No one has to, you know, it doesn't have to see the light of day.
Yeah,
but
it's a nice medium just to get it
It's just
out,
for you, yeah.
It's like, I can't remember, I was at Chocolate Poetry Club.
Which I'm going to.
I haven't been this year, but I need to go back. But I can't remember who said it to me, but someone said that a poem is like a one-night stand. Whereas a novel is like a
lifelong commitment. Yeah. It's a marriage. Yeah, it's a marriage. Yeah, there's no divorce in that one. Yeah. No, you know what? I would disagree.
Okay.
I would say that they're both, you're both invested in them equally. Because a lot of, like, I don't do it that much, but a lot of poets and a lot of spoken word artists draft and redraft.
Yeah.
And like there's one there's a couple of people I've spoken to, they're like, yeah, it will never be finished.
Yeah.
But 100%. It's as finished as it is right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like you have to invest X amount of time in both equally.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's both because it's product of your labor.
Yeah,
You've put in all that time. It's not a hit it and quit it type of thing. It's like you're doing one poem, you're doing another poem, you're going back to the other poem because you got an idea from the other poem.
It
is back and forth.
It's true.
You know, so it's both marriage. You know,
it's true. I just like the fact of once I do finish a poem,
that is done. Yeah,
I can see why they said that.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
It makes sense. It makes sense.
It's just more like it's just on the page, and I can just revisit this thought.
Yeah.
So that's why I recommend just...
Oh, and another thing I recommend as well is if you get ideas on travel and whatever, I'm someone who's got memory of a sieve. So take that note down because you're not going to remember later on.
It's true.
Believe me, the amount of times where... And the worst thing is, like, my creative flow usually comes late at night. And it's like, I'm about to sleep. I do not want this in my mind, but I have to get it down. Otherwise, in the morning, it's gone.
Do you know what I find? The questions that I want answered, you answer them in the... Like, you're talking, I'll just go back over my... It's like, that's what I was going to ask, because I had this written down. What do you do to get over... What do you do when you hit the wall? Like, how do you get over it? I know what you do. Like, that was what brought you into poetry.
Yeah.
Where do you want to take your words?
That's a very good question. Where do I want to take my words? I mean, I thought about it a lot. And a lot of people, you know what the funny thing is? I've not been on the scene for long, but I've been everywhere, more or less.
Yeah,
like, I've
been
in a lot of places in regards to, like, spoken word and open mic nights. And I feel like exposure for me... As always, I've always said, I'm just getting my foot in the door. And to be honest, I will not know until I hit a point. And I will only know when I do hit it where, okay, my whole leg is in the door now. What am I going to do next? And I feel like, for me, like, I've thought about taking steps. Like, people have, someone has approached me who's a producer who wants to put my music down against beats. This podcast has happened. So another inch of my leg in the door is now in the door. And I feel like, I mean, there's no goal for it. And I spoke to someone as well who was another event organizer or a host. And I was like to him, look, even if I get featured, even if I become big in the sense of being big, you know, not George the Poet big, but big in my own sense. For me, my main thing would be to look behind me at those who are trying to make it, and I would be pulling them up into this light. Because I feel like I've not seen it a lot, and it is very, very welcoming, but I think there's a lot of fear of, oh, if I go into an open mic stage, or if I perform my piece, oh, people are going to be judging me, people are going to be competing against me, or I'm going to be competing against them, I'm not going to have enough to do it. Don't. Go. Do it. Write. Perform. Yeah. Because the one thing that you'll find when you go to all of these open mic nights, they're very welcoming. Like, my fear was exactly that. But I know now that the only competition is yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? And even that is no competition, you know?
I mean, any competitions that you do find that you have are all inside your head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're, and it's, I know it's personal with me. I hear someone else's bars, I'm like, rah. I need to go home.
I'm clicking nonstop and nobody's clicking for me.
I can't perform. I was going to perform this tonight now.
Yeah. But the one thing you also have to realize is, like, okay, so there's a lot of artists, no names, that do perform for clicks, which is all good and well for them because they've written punchlines and they want them punchlines to be recognized. And that's beautiful. Like, do you? That's your amazing thing. But I also love when the whole room falls silent and they're just, when you can draw the air out of a room is a even more powerful thing to do. So I feel like, you know, do both.
Yeah,
or
true.
find your thing that you like. Find your words. Find your expressive way. And just flow with that. Don't really, you know, appreciate other people. Yes. Take inspiration. I've taken a lot of inspiration from a lot of people, but don't let somebody else's performance, you know,
discourage you.
Come into yours. You know, you are you and they are them,
yeah,
you know?
It's true. But that's the one thing, the reason why I had to have, like, because before, I had a 6-month break from performing.
Yeah.
From maybe October, maybe it's only 4 or 5 months, actually, from maybe October. And then basically what it was as much as what people don't understand from going to open mic events, it's just an open mic event, but at the same time it's a gig where me as an artist, I'm performing, and as much as it's kind of easy to say don't take on board what everyone else is saying, when you're there at an event and you want to be present, it's kind of hard not to take on board everything that everyone is kind of putting out there, in a sense, kind of the energies that everyone's on. So then, I don't know, as a writer, as a performer, those things affect you anyway.
But it's how you let them affect you that
I would
emphasize, because you can go and see somebody's on high level energy, and then someone who's on a lower energy will come into that space and then they're elevated.
That's
a beautiful thing. Like, someone, like, I've seen a lot of open micers who are first timers, never performed anywhere, never let their work see the day of light, and then they perform and then they completely kill it.
I know, right?
They just kill, like, it, and then you're like, why are you not performing before,
you know?
Like, what, why have I only heard of you now? And that's I think that's what the beauty of it, and the thing I really love about open mic nights, is because you see a lot of people who people who are not famous but should be famous. Like, why are you not a big name right now?
You read someone's I'm not really a writer,
let me drop this fire on you.
Why are you not performing that? Because it's not really that good. It's like, nah, people need to, what's the word, believe in their,
elevate each other.
Elevate each other, but then you need to also be able to elevate yourself.
Yeah,
and be,
which is a very hard thing to do.
Yeah,
it's very, like,
hard.
The one thing I've realized is, and you probably answer this as well, is as writers and poets and spoken words and artists, we do not take compliments very well, but we want them.
Oh yeah,
we want them. Like, we really do. Like, please compliment me, but I will say nothing to you, or I'll be like, okay, thanks, cheers, cool, I'm glad you liked it, follow me on Insta, like, that's something that, you know,
it's so true.
It is an actuality of the fact that, I think it's not the fact that we don't know how, it's the fact that we don't know how to process it, rather than we don't like it.
I think it's more, I don't know, for me it's kind of like, because I don't set out to get a real reaction. I want one, yeah, of course, it's great, but I don't write it in the hopes that I'm going to get.
You don't write for clicks.
I don't write. I'm writing for my own like purpose.
Yeah,
I'm writing my own. I'm writing just, and then when I perform, I'm just like, do you guys hear this wordplay that I put in here?
Did you hear this? You know, two bars. You know, come
did
on.
You hear it? If you heard like, it,
do I need to rewind?
Even if you didn't click, just nod at
just
me.
Just nod, like, yeah. That's give me the head nod, the easy little.
That's all I want to hear personally, because I'm writing for myself. And I want other people to, if you catch on to these, some punchlines I write and I'm just like, yo, that was hard.
That was fire.
Wonder if anyone else
will
notice that.
Should I click or, you know, the one thing I've seen is a lot of people, even those who write for clicks, like a lot of people are very afraid to click at somebody's thing, you know, and a lot of event organizers I've seen have been like, if you like something, please click, like, let them know that you're liking it.
But
that's happened, they're still afraid. Like, guys, click, like, that's, I mean, we don't write for clicks, but we appreciate clicks. Like, you know, it makes us like, you know, okay,
it's
they like this,
like,
then they write like.
When you perform on the stage, like a theatre piece, like if people really enjoy the piece, you will stand up and applaud someone and a standing ovation.
Yeah.
But in a theatre, you'll find that certain people will be happy to just straight away stand up, clap.
Yeah.
But there's some people that will wait for other people to stand up
before
they
stand
up,
and then nobody stands up.
Yeah.
You know?
And I just think it's just kind of, if you feel something, just go for it.
Go for it.
Because like no one's really watching or judging you. They're just
no.
And if they are, then it's on them, you know?
Exactly.
My next question. Where does your name come from? The guy who
the question that's been asked many, 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 many times. Okay, keeping it real, keeping it honest with you lot, yeah, there is no poetical answer for it. But I thought about it. And, like, I did write a little Insta post on my Instagram about explaining everything, but to explain it for you guys, for your benefit, because I love you a lot, is because breaking down, so I perform with a suit. One of the main reasons behind that was because, and I think it is bloodline, my dad loved wearing suits. I even, from 3 years old, I'm more comfortable in a suit than anything else. Like trackies and hoodies didn't work for me back then. I was a suit and tie and, you know, what's it, top hat and suspenders and this whole, like, you know, image was something that really, really appealed to me, you know. And the purple tie part, I love purple. I mean, for me, I want purple to be a color whereby, like yellow, when you see yellow, you feel happy. And for me, purple is a symbol of positive mental health, and I feel like there could be a color out there for it, but I've not seen it, and I've kind of embraced purple as it, and the two together, it's just, for me, it's like, you know, when you perform, when you go on stage or when you do anything, you know, it should be something that's, you present yourself in the best light, whatever it is. I'm not saying go and wear a suit and tie, I mean, no, go and wear something that works for you. So if it is a certain hoodie and trackie you're comfortable in, wear that hoodie and trackie. If it's a certain niche of clothing or a certain way of style or this, or, you know, certain feather in your hair, whatever it is, embrace it, because you're more and more likely to perform better when you're in your element, while you're out of your element, because a lot of these places you will be out of your element, so you have to bring that element of you to the outer element, you know. It's the whole idea of, you know, making, I'm gonna call it workplace because you are your own business person, but making the workplace, you know, fit to you, then you fit to the workplace, if that makes sense, that analogy. So suit and tie, purple tie, and I was like, I want a name whereby, so I used to perform under C. Desta, which technically is my name, it is my name, but I felt it was, one, clunky, and two, it didn't, I didn't want my name to be what represented me or my brand or, you know, what I am.
Yeah.
So I was still having a thing. And it just purple tie, and then the guy with the purple tie, and it just fit. And I was like, bro, okay, we're going with this, the guy with the purple tie. And
I mean, it's out there enough.
It is.
It's a cool name in the sense of people will hear it and they'll be like, who is the guy?
Yeah, and the funny thing now is, like, I'm not someone who's even at all remotely used to getting recognized, but someone came up to me and like, oh, you're the guy with the purple tie. And then I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, so you know my stage name, but do you know my name? Are you that deep of a fan? Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love being noticed, and I love, like, people knowing the name Guy with the Purple Tie, yeah. And I love people hearing my poetry. And, you know, I'm not trying to be vain, but, you know, you do love getting, you know, appreciated, and everyone does love getting appreciated. And I'm not complaining that people don't know my name. It's just very interesting that, you know, it's the way I wanted it to work is working so much better than I even thought of it,
It's
becoming like, you know, like someone like 50 Cent. You don't know his real name, but you know he's 50 Cent.
Yeah.
You know.
It's true. Unless you've actually researched, which I
unless
have.
Unless you, yeah.
I can't tell you off the top of my mind. I have looked it up, I know.
But, I mean, okay, better example for me. My name is Sharonette, but it is very clunky and not that memorable. I mean, to some it is, but it's like how Akon, for example, his real name is hella long.
Yeah.
And he just goes by Akon. I go by the guy with the purple tie.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's a cool pseudonym. I was just curious where it came from.
No worries. Hope that answers all of your questions on the name.
To be honest, you've actually just answered all my questions. Like, I had questions here where you've literally just answered it within another answer.
Is it? Do you want to ask it and get a little bit of elaboration, or?
I mean, maybe I can ask this one. What inspires you to write?
Everything. I mean, for me, I think the way I write is I find inspiration in everything around me. That's how I began.
Yeah.
So I saw a billboard's poster, and that was that triggered for me to write a poem about ice, you see.
Yeah.
So, and it's interesting that I even remember that. That's random fact for you lot. And then other than that, like, hearing other people would inspire me, reading something will inspire me, watching a film more than not has inspired me a lot more than I actually thought. So I would actually deep my lyrics and I'd be like, wait, that was inspired from that film. And like, I would just randomly say it to like people around me, and they'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, keep quiet, like, you know, you're rambling. But other than that, prompts, there's a lot of poetry prompts that have inspired me to write and to just challenge my writing, I guess. And recently, actually, battle rap. So I've written 2 battle rap pieces now in poetry form, and I've met a couple of battle rappers. And, you know, not trying to be too much optimistic, but, you know, I'm trying to push for poetry and battle rap to fuse and have a poetical battle rap. It's been done, but not that many times. But that is where I get my inspiration from. But I believe, you know, a lot of people, I don't want a lot of people to think, oh, you know, I must, you know, find the way he finds inspiration. Find inspiration the way you find it. Whatever it is, spirituality, religion, whatever it may be, family life, whatever it may be, just find the inspiration. But make sure you write for yourself first before you write for other people. Because when you write for yourself first, no matter what anybody else says to you about your piece, you value it more. You know, you should always value your work higher than anybody else's. And it's something I struggle on. I still don't, I love my pieces, but I still don't have that level yet. And you can also build it up on going to open mic nights, receiving these feedbacks, and, you know, hearing what people say. But don't take everything too hard. You know, there will be people who will not like your piece. There will be people who may not understand your piece. And I actually love people who find a different meaning than you anticipated from your piece.
You just,
you know,
take that on. You're just
and
like,
you're like,
yeah,
wow, yeah, definitely, that's how I wrote it. Yeah, cool. Yeah, dope. No, but it's beautiful. Like, no, you can write a piece and there's three different interpretations. And you're like, wow, okay.
Because I think I performed one poem one time and someone's like, oh, you've got all these 90s references in there. Did you put that on there on purpose? I was like,
yeah, sure. Yeah. Of course.
Of course I know about that. Yeah. And he started pointing them out. I was like, oh snap.
Okay, they are 90s references.
I just wrote down words. But yeah, I think my last and final question for you is kind of, for people out there who are up and coming, what's your one piece of advice that you wish that you heard while you were coming up?
That's an interesting question, because I don't really see myself as, I've not left that phase of up and coming. I feel like I'm someone, I mean, so one thing I would say, just from experience, is make sure you do not burn yourself out. Make sure you do not, because as much as I do go to so many events, I ensure I have breaks. I ensure I have moments where I'm doing nothing. And it's very easy to get caught up in the, oh, there's this event, there's that event, there's this event, there's that event, there's this event. I feel like I've sprinkled or salt-bathed some, you know, just personal advice. But one thing I would also say is just write, just create, work with people, write with people, go to workshops, go to different events. Even if you go to an event and you're not on the open mic list, it's amazing to just listen. The amount of inspiration you get from just listening to people is the most beautiful thing. Just try and get yourself out there. Try and just go to different open mic nights. It will happen. I've not yet reached that point of I'm successful or well known. I'm just grinding. I'm just putting myself out there. I'm just attending these events, supporting other people. And, you know, what you put out in the world will boomerang back to you. So, you know, just, and the biggest thing, write for you first. I wrote too many times for other people and for events that it loses your tonality. Like, you can write to a theme, but make sure you make that theme work to you and you not work to the theme. That's as much as I can say. And just be you. Do you. Do you, bro. Do you, sis. You know, Brian, do it.
Yeah, so what time are we on? Okay, dope. That's cool.
How long?
It's been like an hour and about 20 minutes so far.
Question for you.
Yes.
And let me actually double check before I say it. Give me 2 seconds.
Cool.
For your viewers,
yeah.
Or for your listeners, sorry, would you like a short piece
be
recited that has never been heard, so it'd be an exclusive to hear?
If you got a poem you want to share with us?
I do. I wrote this, when did I write this? 31st of Jan, 1st of Feb, so between that time. And I had gone to a Lego event, a pop-up Lego event in King's Cross, and it was a Lego house. So this piece is called Lego House.
Okay, take away.
I want to build a Lego house with bricks that are the inside layers of my heart. I want to build a Lego house that I can call my home. No big bad wolf at my home. My Lego house would be the best on the street. See, a Lego house is designed with no design. The inner layers of my heart, molded for safety. Maybe if I wear my heart on my house, they can't hurt me. My Lego house would have many rooms, but not many in it to lay their head to rest. My Lego house has soft clouds for bed. They are the clouds of my dreams. I would have my Lego house on a street accessible to you and you and you. My Lego house would be built to show you vulnerability is real and it's okay to have your heart on display. My Lego house has many rooms. My Lego house has many rooms. My Lego house has many rooms. It was built for you. Don't you like it? My Lego house has heart-shaped Lego bricks. I'd build it with the inner layers of my heart, but she ran off with it. I'd say it's safe to have it on display, but mine got stolen. My pillows aren't clouds of dreams. Those clouds were filled with rain that came when she stole my heart. So now I sit on empty dreams. I build a Lego house made with Lego heart-shaped bricks. My Lego house has many rooms. My Lego house was built for you. I didn't realize that you were the big bad wolf. I guess I'll just have to make a Lego house out of my soul. Peace. See, the guy with the purple tie. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that.
There was... parts of that I'm going to have to re-listen to because there was so much.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to have to listen back to it. What was the bit that I liked? The fact of your... the idea of kind of... it was so sick. Now I'm picturing it in my head. It's so sick. Like... because I'm knowing that it's based off this pop-up event, it's kind of like you've used the idea of love, but then it's kind of like you're looking at the love for Lego, but then also using just love as a feeling as well, and then kind of saying like, kind of like you wear your heart on your sleeve, it's all on display. That's the part that I like the most. Like you're talking about love being on display, but then it's kind of that... I can't think of it's got that second side of it that's kind of juxtaposed.
Like the dark side of juxtaposition.
That's the word I was looking for. Juxtaposition. It's got like on the juxtaposition, it's kind of got this kind of like Lego just being on display. Just Lego that you look at so innocently that anyone could pick up.
Yeah.
It's the same as love. Anyone could pick up your love.
Yeah.
And take it from you or give it away, you know? And it's just that juxtaposition that you have playing out throughout the whole of that piece, which I love the most of it.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's really, I wanted really, to give really something clever. Something no, new. That's really, you know, clever. Just to, I mean, I guess it was, it is that sense of, you know, we are all building our own, you know, platforms. We're building our own, you know, images. We're all trying to become up and coming.
Yeah.
But don't give away your Lego bricks that quickly.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, put your, you know, eggs in all in one basket. Yeah. But don't fear to do it as well. Like, a lot of people say, don't put all your eggs in one basket. But they never explain why. They never answer why. And it's I think, the fear of people having their heart broken or having, you know, this deal not falling through or this event not going down that has... you know, us fearing, you know, we fear not to put ourselves on display.
Or my performance didn't play out how I planned it to play out.
The amount of times my performances don't play out. Like, the amount of times I skip lines in my head because I've forgotten the line.
You know?
It happens. But only you realize, that's another advice, only you realize that mistake. So when I very first started, sorry to go back on this, very first started performing at that event, I tried to cram it as much as I could in my brain. And when I was performing it live, I felt like I knew it. But then I started to fumble. And that's the only time I've ever gotten nervous, was because I knew in my head I was messing up. But the one thing that kept saying in my mind that kept me, you know, that I didn't then say, oh, sorry, yeah, I'm going to be done by, is that I said in my mind, I have to get to the end. No matter what, I have to get to the end. And when I did rewatch it, while I had it, and it got lost, is because the one thing I realized was only I noticed that I had messed up.
Yeah.
The whole audience were like, "Bro, that was amazing. That was dope. Thank you. I mean, I was in the great, but you know."
Or like when you're shaking, and like, or you're really nervous, you're like,
I must be visibly shaking.
Yeah, but everyone's like,
but
like
no, you do look fine. No, but I was shaking. Like. I was like shaking, you know.
But it's just like all these things are kind of, guess, just all
it's
in
trial
your
and
head.
Error. Yeah. But it's trial and error. And it's all it is just you have to keep doing it. Keep facing your fears. Keep, like, battle rap is not something I do. Like, writing for a battle rap is not what I do, but I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. I really did. And, you know, yeah, it's just, you have to just push yourself, you know, because your comfort zone is something that expands and keeps expanding. And it's not something that you should ever let it, never stay too comfortable. Keep moving, keep doing, keep it's creating, true. You know,
one
keep connecting.
One piece of advice that I'll give out
please
for
do.
Free is, if you're not nervous, it's not worth it.
No. And use your nerves to positivity.
Yeah.
Because you will find the more you are nervous, it shows you care.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not saying that if you're not nervous that you don't care.
Yeah.
But use your nerves or your confidence.
Yeah.
With good measure. You know, it's like a pinch of salt. You don't want too much of it, but you want a little bit of it to keep you
on your
kicking.
Toes,
yeah.
But do you have anything to plug? Any events you're going to be at over the rest of this month? I might try and get this episode out tomorrow. If I don't, it'll be out next week.
So if it does come out tomorrow, I'll give some events for within this week.
Yeah.
If not, I can give a bunch of other ones for next week. So within this week, I will be... tomorrow, I will be at... Tracks on Tap, which is an event in Streatham Space Project.
Okay.
Other than that, I will be on the 8th. I'll be at Beans Rhyme and Life, which is in Staten's Coffee House. Otherwise, next week I will be at BYOB, which is Bring Your Own Bars poetry at Box Park Wembley, or I will be at Womanity. Which will be in Stoke Newington, but all of my, and I will, the biggest one I guess, which I've not been to yet, which we did mention,
Chocolate
Poetry Club,
yeah.
Which I'll be at on the 17th, and one other one, sorry, that I will plug is Off the Chest, which they have a, I don't know if it's new or old, but they're going to be in West London, which is interesting and new, me being from West London, but all of my events and, you know, everything that I do, you can find it either by searching the hashtag the guy with the purple tie, or you can find me on Instagram at cdesta written world, or on Twitter at cdestaw. Let me actually make sure that I'm giving you the right things, people. Sorry.
I'll write it all in the description as well, though, guys.
Yes. Otherwise, it is. I was right. cdestaw is capital. So on my Instagram, all of my socials will also be plastered. A big, massive thank you to you guys for.
Before I cut you off, are you working on anything that's coming out soon? Like any projects, like singles. Your book, if you had a date for it, poetry book, anything?
Sadly, no.
Okay.
Not yet, but it's in the woodworks.
Okay,
it
cool.
Is more, it's more conversations I'm having with people.
Fair.
Which would probably lead to that. I have thought about bringing out an anthology, but
cool.
It's something
that'd
that I'm not experienced in, and
yeah.
It's very much out of my comfort zone. But a lot of my writing stuff, new stuff will be performed.
Okay.
I will perform something new at Womanity. So keep an eye out on that. And I'm writing a lot, so you will hear a lot of new stuff. If you can't make it out to the events, I do like snapshots and reviews of the night, as well as I do post all of my, well, as much as of my performances, as much as I can record and not lose, on IGTV, which is Instagram TV. But yeah, other than that, just, you know, don't be afraid. If you see me in events, to come up to me, I'll give you one of my snazzy cards that people tend to love. No idea why. It is purple. But yeah, like, don't be afraid to approach me. Don't be afraid to come and ask me for advice. DM me. I don't get many DMs, you know, so slide in my DMs. Please do, you know. And we can probably meet at an event as well. But yeah, keep creating.
Cool. So yeah, you were saying something before. But yes, I cut you off, sorry.
I want to give a massive thank you to My Opinion Means, which I got it right this time. And a massive thank you to Corey. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show, man.
This has been such a wholesome, wonderful opportunity. If you guys have ever seen this gentleman perform, you will understand why I'm in awe and why he's an amazing soul.
Thank you so much.
And if you haven't, what the heck are you guys doing? You're listening to his podcast. Try and come down to one of his events as soon as you can. But yeah, no, thanks so much. And I will always happily say yes to things like this.
Come on again. I'll find another...
Most definitely.
...guest or something. We'll do something definitely. Different. But guys at home, thank you very much for listening. If you've enjoyed the show, thank you again. You know, you're a subscriber. You enjoy the show and that. But
if you're not, you better subscribe right now.
But if you haven't enjoyed the show, then more for you for sat at home for 1 hour and 30 minutes.
And listening to my voice and my dribble.
Yeah, you're an idiot. Like, why don't you turn off sooner? But anyway.
That being said, you've got a lot of advice that you can turn on. Man. Oh, one small quick advice is my card always has on the back of it, changing the world one word at a time. Make sure you guys do that. Whatever it is, whatever art you do, it is beautiful. Don't let nobody tell you nothing different. That has been a guy with a purple tie. Peace.
Thank you. Goodbye.